in Manhattan, blocks from what used to be the World Trade Center, this is Democracy Now in Exile. As the U.S. House, Senate, and Bush administration vow retaliation for Tuesday's attacks, we'll hear Voices of Peace. Arab American spokesperson Hussein Ivich, Israeli feminist Simona Sharoni, Kathy Kelly of Voices in the Wilderness, Jesuit priest Dan Berrigan, and Dave McReynolds of the War Resisters League. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! in Exile, broadcasting from near Ground Zero, next to what used to be the towers of the World Trade Center. I'm Amy Goodman, with the staff of Democracy Now!, many of whom have been coming in and out and staying through this period because we are in the midst of an evacuation zone, a national emergency, as the crisis of the last 2 days continues to unfold. The U.S.'s resolve to wreak revenge loom large today after hijackers armed with knives and box cutters stunned the United States by flying passenger jets into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. President Bush spoke to several world leaders yesterday in a bid to forge an international coalition against terror. As he put it, as rescue efforts went on through the night in the ruins of the New York City skyscraper and the Pentagon in Washington. At least 82 bodies have been recovered from the rubble of the Twin Towers in Manhattan by early today, but Mayor Rudolph Giuliani says the eventual death toll is likely to be in thousands. About 40,000 people had worked in the 110-story skyscrapers, icons of U.S. trade, which crumbled to the ground Tuesday after the hijackers flew a passenger airliner into each of the towers. At the Pentagon, partially demolished by a third hijacked airliner in the coordinated attacks, about 200 people are still missing in the smoking ruins. A bipartisan resolution vowing U.S. retaliation won unanimous congressional approval in the early hours today. The House of Representatives passed the non-binding measure by a vote of 408-0, about 12 hours after the Senate approved it 100-0. Arizona Senator John McCain, veteran of the Vietnam War, said the U.S. had a message for those behind the attacks: we're coming after you. God may have mercy on you, but we won't. In Kabul, Arab nationalists, Arab nationals were reported to have evacuated the Afghan capital as other residents began digging trenches in anticipation of possible U.S. retaliation. While it's not immediately clear how many Arab nationals live in Afghanistan, residents said almost all had left the capital. As fear of an American attack mounted, the Taliban senior spokesperson called the few foreign reporters to issue a statement which in part defended Osama bin Laden and said, "These days, Osama bin Laden's name has become very popular, and to an extent it has become a symbol. These days, even to the common people, Osama bin Laden's name is associated with all controversial acts. Osama bin Laden does not have such capabilities. We still hope sanity prevails in the United States. We're confident that if a fair investigation is carried out by American authorities, the Taliban will not be found guilty of involvement in such cowardly acts." The statement also said, again, this from the Taliban's senior spokesperson in Kandahar. The statement said, "Killing our leaders will not help our people any. There is no factory in Afghanistan that's worth the price of a single missile fired at us. It will simply increase the mistrust between the people in the region and the United States." Whatever else there is to say about this entreaty, one part is indubitably true. They do not have such capabilities. We still hope sanity prevails in the United States. We're confident that if a fair investigation is carried out by American authorities, the Taliban will not be found guilty of involvement in such cowardly acts. The statement also said, again, this from the Taliban's senior spokesperson in Kandahar. The statement said, killing our leaders will not help our people any. There is no factory in Afghanistan that's worth the price of a single missile fired at us. It will simply increase the mistrust between the people in the region and the United States. Whatever else there is to say about this entreaty, one part that is indisputably true is that the lack really before is misused. These days, even to the common people, Osama bin Laden's name is associated with all controversial acts. Osama bin Laden does not have such capabilities. We still hope sanity prevails in the United States. We're confident that if a fair investigation is carried out by American authorities, the Taliban will not be found guilty of involvement in such cowardly acts. The statement also said, again, this from the Taliban's senior spokesperson in Kandahar. The statement said, killing our leaders will not help our people any. There is no factory in Afghanistan that's worth the price of a single missile fired at us. It will simply increase the mistrust between the people in the region and the United States. Whatever else there is to say about this entreaty, one part that is indisputably true is that this landlocked rugby deflation is an absolute misery. And popular, and to an extent it has become a symbol. These days, even to the common people, Osama bin Laden's name is associated with all controversial acts. Osama bin Laden does not have such capabilities. We still hope sanity prevails in the United States. We're confident that if a fair investigation is carried out by American authorities, the Taliban will not be found guilty of involvement in such cowardly acts. The statement also said, again, this from the Taliban's senior spokesperson in Kandahar. The statement said, killing our leaders will not help our people any. There is no factory in Afghanistan that's worth the price of a single missile fired at us. It will simply increase the mistrust between the people in the region and the United States. Whatever else there is to say about this entreaty, one part that is indisputably true is that this landlocked, ruggedly beautiful nation is an absolute misery. Again, the state of Labatine folks has become very popular, and to an extent it has become a symbol. These days, even to the common people, Osama bin Laden's name is associated with all controversial acts. Osama bin Laden does not have such capabilities. We still hope sanity prevails in the United States. We're confident that if a fair investigation is carried out by American authorities, the Taliban will not be found guilty of involvement in such cowardly acts. The statement also said, again, this from the Taliban's senior spokesperson in Kandahar. The statement said, killing our leaders will not help our people any. There is no factory in Afghanistan that's worth the price of a single missile fired at us. It will simply increase the mistrust between the people in the region and the United States. Whatever else there is to say about this entreaty, one part that is indisputably true is that this landlocked, ruggedly beautiful nation is an absolute misery. Again, the statement of Taliban senior spokesperson. Here in the United States, as drums of war are beat, the attacks on our Americans has increased. The situation around the country has become increasingly difficult. Federal authorities say they have identified more than a dozen hijackers of Middle Eastern descent in Tuesday's attacks and gathered evidence linking them to Osama bin Laden. In Chicago, a Molotov cocktail was tossed yesterday at an Arab American community center. No one was injured and there was little damage. In Huntington, New York, a 75-year-old man who was drunk tried to run over a Pakistani woman in the parking lot of a shopping mall, chased her into the store, and threatened to kill her for, quote, destroying my country. And in a southwest suburb of Chicago, police turned back 300 marchers, some waving American flags and shouting USA, USA, as they tried to march on the mosque. Three demonstrators were arrested. At the time, there were no injuries, and demonstrators were kept blocks from the closed Muslim worship place. We now turn to Hussein Ibish, who is a spokesperson for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee in Washington, D.C. Can you talk about your reaction and what is happening now to American Arabs and Muslim Americans?
We we've been hearing from Arab Americans and American Muslims all over the country for the past 2 days, that the anxiety is mounting, the fear is mounting, because their increasing pattern of threats, of statements that people will be harmed, of attacks on individuals and institutions. Several mosques have been attacked. There was a shooting at a mosque in Texas, another attack on a mosque in Virginia. A mob tried to march on a mosque in Chicago and was restrained by police. Had Arab American cab drivers dragged out of their cabs and assaulted and beaten and harassed. We've had a firebombing in Chicago at an Arab American social service center, which you know, helps immigrant communities assimilate and find work. We've had an extraordinary outpouring of anger and hatred directed, and not at the criminals, but at Americans because of their Arab ethnicity or their Muslim religious affiliation. And I think all of us who were targets, and that includes, you know, Arab Americans and American Muslims, and I should tell you that hundreds, literally, of Arab Americans worked in the World Trade Center, and we've all been targeted. I mean, I think we've all come under attack, including Arab Americans. And at a time when we're reeling, like the rest of the country, from the shock and the horror of this attack, to find ourselves also now held somehow culpable, guilt by ethnicity, by at least some of our fellow citizens, is just an additional trauma that's almost unbearable.
So what are you doing about it?
Well, certainly we're monitoring the situation very closely. We're working closely with police in D.C. and around the country. And I must say, the police have responded very well. They've taken these threats very seriously. They've helped us to distinguish between those that are more serious and those that might be just people venting their rage. And they've really done their best, I think, to provide protection. And I think that their behavior has been exemplary. Also, we are urging caution. We're asking people to be careful. We're asking them to be very aware of their circumstances, be aware of the people around them, keep a close eye, be on alert. We're asking them to use their common sense, and we're asking them to report anything suspicious or disturbing or unusual to the police and to us. And basically, that's all we can do. I mean, I think a combination of caution and common sense is often the most that many people can do to protect themselves in a dangerous situation. And we are doing that. But we're also taking note, and we're letting everybody know that at the same time there's been a kind of outpouring of anger and hatred from some people in the United States against Arab Americans and American Muslims. There's been the opposite effect also, where a large number of people have spontaneously reached out to us and reached out to our community. Let us know that they don't hold us guilty by ethnicity, who let us know that we are valued, that they know that we're in pain, but they know that we are an important part of American society, and that we are not going to be blamed or victimized just because of our identity. And that outpouring of compassion has been deeply moving, deeply touching. And I myself experienced both a whole rash of death threats and hatred yesterday, including from callers on the air, and an outpouring of compassion from people who contacted us to let us know that you know, that we were still valued and we were still you know, welcome in this society. And I think that's very important.
You know, I first asked you, Hussein Ibish, what are you doing? But that question of what are people doing in reaching out, can you give us examples of communities, non-Arab or non-Muslim American communities that are doing that, and what specifically people can do?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll tell you that in Chicago, for example, the other ethnic groups in Chicago have banded together to hold a press conference in which they express their appreciation of the Arab American community and express their opposition to any attacks targeting Arab Americans or any expression of hatred against Arabs or Muslims in the United States. I think that was exceptionally important, and I think it was very much appreciated. And that's a model that could be followed. by people in other communities around the United States. And so that's certainly one thing that can be done. Also, we have received communications and spontaneous communications from people all over the country, people who've called us, sent us email, written to us to let us know that they don't participate in this pattern of guilt by ethnicity, who let us know that we are still valued and welcome. And I think that's, you know, it can be as simple and as spontaneous as a call of, you know, which expresses hatred or hate speech. I mean, the opposite can be done. And I certainly think that at a time when many Americans are angry and frightened and confused, and we in our community share all of those emotions, at a time like that, we can talk to our friends and neighbors and remind ourselves that in a criminal act, the guilty are the criminals and not an ethnic group and not a religion. Send us email written to us to let us know that they don't participate in this pattern of guilt by ethnicity, who let us know that we are still valued and welcome. And I think that's, you know, it can be as simple and as spontaneous as a call of, you know, which expresses hatred or hate speech. I mean, the opposite can be done. And I certainly think that at a time when many Americans are angry and frightened and confused, and we in our community share all of those emotions, at a time like that, we can talk to our friends and neighbors and remind ourselves that in a criminal act, the guilty are the criminals and not an ethnic group and not a religion, to us to let us know that they don't participate in this pattern of guilt by ethnicity, who let us know that we are still valued and welcome. And I think that's, you know, it can be as simple and as spontaneous as a call of, you know, which expresses hatred or hate speech. I mean, the opposite can be done. And I certainly think that at a time when many Americans are angry and frightened and confused, and we in our community share all of those emotions, at a time like that, we can talk to our friends and neighbors and remind ourselves that in a criminal act, the guilty are the criminals and not an ethnic group and a religion. In a lot of cases, what we know are whatever deals we have received from our people on the ground. In cake drivers, there have been different kinds of incidents. In one case, it was a real limited of the incident during the war. It was actually not of the Americans, but Sikh, who, are from India, who were which was the way it was. So an athlete was hauled out of their bases in Sudan and struck before the event has performed well or better than usual. I think Peter Jennings, in particular, deserves some credit for having avoided some of the mistakes that he himself has been guilty of in the past, in rushing to judgment, in not being skeptical, etc. I think he deserves, credit where credit's due. For once, we can say, that somebody in a corporate media job has actually done a good job, and I think we trash them rightly all the time when they do well, as in this case, or relatively well. They probably ought to get a nod, so I'm willing to give that to him. But I think also that some statements by the Attorney General Ashcroft and Secretary of State Powell were also helpful to the and even Mayor Giuliani, none of whom have a history of being the most compassionate people in the world, but I think all of them have made statements that were, well, they could have been more forthcoming, but they were clear in saying that people should not be blamed or targeted because of their ethnicity and their religion. And I think we need more statements like that, from perhaps one from the president wouldn't hurt, and I think we're looking forward to that. So while there are malevolent people out there, I think particularly supporters of the Israeli right, supporters of Ariel Sharon, who are really trying to whip up anger and hatred in order really to justify any extreme actions Israel might want to take, there are other people who are saying, no, look, wait a minute. The people responsible for this are a organization and a group of criminals. and not and that this cannot be used as an excuse to pathologize a culture or defame a religion.
What about to bomb a country?
Well, that's another matter. I think that is being, the groundwork for that is being laid, and I think most people are prepared to see some incidents of that. Now, this becomes very complicated because I think that at the moment, most people are ready to see some sort of attack on Afghanistan. And certainly if it's true that all of this comes out of an organization that emanates from Afghanistan, it's going to be very hard to argue that the United States has options other than taking military action of some kind. On the other hand, of course, we're always constrained by international law, by the laws of war, by the various rules that nations have committed to follow. That's very important. My fear is that this can also be, an argument can be made, for example, that that someone like Mr. Bin Laden or even the Taliban state structure could not have done this without without the support of other countries, perhaps in the Middle East, perhaps countries that we have a vendetta against, perhaps countries that some people in the Bush administration feel they have unfinished business with. And the argument, even if it was made up out of whole cloth, even if it was an utter fiction, could be made, that some country's intelligence service was involved, and that could serve as a rationale for some sort of major military action that people might have wanted to take anyway.
And that is Hussein Ibish, who is spokesperson for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee in Washington, D.C. The website is www.adcantidiscriminationcommittee.org, adc.org. You are listening to Democracy Now! When we return, we'll speak with Simona Cerrone, who is a visiting professor at Evergreen State College in Washington State, as well as Kathy Kelly, founder of Voices in the Wilderness. Tomorrow, her 40-day fast completes. She has been standing in front of the United Nations until the attack this past Tuesday with a group of other people protesting U.S. sanctions against Iraq. You're listening to Democracy Now! In Exile, broadcasting from near Ground Zero. Stay with us.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
That's right. You are listening to Democracy Now! Blowing in the Wind, Bob Dylan. This is Democracy Now! In Exile, broadcasting from Ground Zero, where Search and rescue emergency workers continue their slow toil as they try to make their way through the rubble of what were the towers of the World Trade Center. It's estimated that thousands of people were trapped in the towers as they collapsed after a terrorist attack that took place on Tuesday. Two commercial airlines that were hijacked slammed into each of the towers. The explosion then caused the ultimate collapse of both buildings. At the same time, a third commercial airliner that was hijacked rammed into the Pentagon. It's estimated that now that at about 200 people are still missing there. A fourth hijacked commercial airliner crashed in western Pennsylvania. At the Pentagon, President Bush visited in office just 9 months and dealing with the worst attack on the United States since Pearl Harbor, said this will be a monumental struggle of good versus evil. But he said good will prevail. One of the things that links Simona Cerroni and Kathy Kelly, our next two guests, is their commitment to militant nonviolence in the face of war and preparations for war. Simona Cerroni is one of the founders of Women in Black, which is well known in Israel as a nonviolent protest group that stands and bears witness. She involved herself with advocacy work on behalf of Israeli women's peace groups, which struggled to end the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, also contributed to solidarity work with Palestinian women in the occupied territories in North America. Kathy Kelly, founder of Voices in the Wilderness. Kathy Kelly, until the last few days, you were standing daily in the midst of your 40-day fast in front of the United Nations to protest the sanctions against Iraq. Now you're in Brooklyn. It's very difficult for people to get into Manhattan. What is your response and where you think we should go at this point?
Well, Amy, I think that it's been very important for us to quietly come together and search for the words, the best words that we can find to try to speak to what has happened. Certainly here in Brooklyn, we're at St. Vincent Ferrer Parish aware of many, many families in nearby parishes. There were 30 families in one parish next to here that are now giving up on the possibility that their loved ones would return from the rubble inside the World Trade Center. And we certainly want to join in offering all manner of condolence. And yet, at the same time, it seems that this name we have for ourselves, Voices in the Wilderness, still pertains to try to be a voice for an alternative. As our president has said, we will and we must respond with overwhelming violence to what has happened. It's our strong, strong contention that particularly at this point, what Colin Powell said should be heard, but heard with maximal understanding. Colin Powell said that the perpetrators of the barbaric crime thought that by destroying buildings and attacking people, they could achieve a political goal, and he went on to condemn this resoundingly. And that's certainly a truthful statement that you cannot achieve a political goal ultimately by using these means, but that's a mirror that still must be held up to people in our country. Hard and all as it is to look into it, the attacks were not mindless, unprovoked, irrational acts of jealousy. It's clear as we listen to people from many places all around the world, many of whom understand exactly what families here in New York and in Washington, D.C. are going through because they've experienced it, but at the hands of U.S. policymakers. As we listen to those people, we have to try to understand what it is that they perceive the United States to be and why they've been at times terrified by our policies.
Simona Cerroni, as one of the founders of Women in Black, your response?
Well, I totally agree with Kathy Kelly, and as we started seeing those horrific images 2 days ago and yesterday, And commentators kept saying that no one has sent pictures like this. I could not help it but go back 20 years ago to the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. And we didn't have, the media was not as omnipresent and broadcasting live from Beirut. But there were over 10,000 people that got killed in those U.S.-sponsored Israeli attacks on Lebanon during that war. And buildings were crumbling left and right, not as tall as the World Trade Center. And I think it's important as we condemn this act and struggle to kind of be a voice in the wilderness and call for a nonviolent response to remind people in our community to educate ourselves and others as to the effects of U.S. foreign policy. And I find that in talking to people about this and mentioning the death toll in Iraq that is mounting as we speak, and mention how many people died in Beirut, in Lebanon in general during the Israeli invasion, and kind of go down the list of crimes that this government has been doing, has been carrying out in the name of its citizens, and that turn us, this is what turned us into targets and basically sacrificed our innocence, not the attack on Monday. So that's one thought that I have. The other thought relates to how ingenious some people were in responding right away with compassion, with concern for others, and with calls urging our leaders to respond in ways that take into consideration long-term implications. And here in Olympia, Washington, there have been vigils going on since Monday. There were two community forums held under the banner of preventing racism and racist attacks on people of Middle Eastern origins, calling for a nonviolent response, as well as massive teachings educating people as to who would want to do this. And people took action on a personal level, just contacting businesses owned by Arab Americans and offering to just keep rotating there to make sure that people could go ahead and continue about their business and not be worried that someone will enter and threaten them.
Simona Sharoni, visiting professor now at Evergreen State College in Washington State. Kathy Kelly with Voice in the Wilderness. She's in the 39th day of a fast against the UN sanctions against Iraq. Kathy, in the West Bank, there was footage shown of some Palestinians apparently celebrating. I believe this was in Nablus. Yasser Arafat and other Palestinian leaders immediately condemned the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. In Iraq, Saddam Hussein said he congratulated those responsible for the attacks. What is your response?
I was myself aggrieved and very, very sad to read that of all the countries that sent words of condolence and shock to the United States, the official position that came from Iraq was one that it was a very sour commentary. I want to say that any person that I've met in Iraq, I went through the list just the other day in my head of families I know, I feel positive that their immediate and their heartfelt and their continued response would be one of sincere condolence and sorrow. And I think especially of a woman whose baby had been rushed into a hospital emergency room while we were visiting, and we went back to just check how was the baby 4 hours later, and we were with her when the baby in fact died. And a reporter asked her, was there anything she wanted him as a journalist to say? And she said, yes, I pray that this will never happen to a mother in your country. And I think also of a family who welcomed a newborn into their home. when Brad and I visited Iraq during the Desert Fox bombing, and they named that baby Hofran, which means forgiveness. So I think that there are certainly many, many people, and the 22 million people in Iraq, who would never want to express congratulatory words at the suffering and the grief that's been visited upon families here. I watched the footage of the children on TV the first day of coverage of the attack on America. And, you know, they showed the same seven children repeatedly throughout the day. And when you looked on the faces of two of them, there was actually some confusion and uncertainty as they must have seen cameras focusing on them. I think it's a very unfortunate mistake to somehow characterize vast numbers of people by, you know, the immature responses of a handful. At any rate, I do think that, again, the people who can sometimes best understand what families here are experiencing right now who've lost loved ones are the ones who've been in war zones, not because they've chosen to, but because they're trapped and they're caught as innocent victims, and many of those are families in the Middle East.
And Simona Cerrone.
Absolutely. I mean, there was very little mentioning in the mainstream media of a vigil in East Jerusalem in front of the American consulate called by Palestinian leaders in East Jerusalem that was actually very well attended yesterday. There was no mention at all of Palestinians donating blood, whether it reached New York and Washington, D.C., it's not important. What is important is this act of compassion that was carried out. There were statements from cities such as Beit Zahur that have come under massive Israeli attack during the past few months. A statement that was issued by the mayor and the people of the town of sincere condolences to the victims in the United States and unequivocal condemnation of this act. And I could go down the list. It's important that Israeli peace groups have focused on getting those statements out of the region to activists in this country and to the media. As I said, the mainstream media has turned its head and is not mentioning it. And the fear is that the footage of those Palestinians cheering, the handful of them that cheered, will be used in the same way that the footage of Palestinians cheering on the rooftops when Scud missiles were fired at in Israel. To really justify further attacks on Palestinians and kind of the political platform of the Sharon government, and thinking about someone using this despicable attack for those other horrendous political ends is really mind-boggling.
Simona Cerrone, you're a peace educator. You've been talking to activists around the country about what people can do, something I'm not seeing in the mainstream media, although I am seeing people like Oliver North be interviewed as an expert on terrorism. For people who are perhaps young, Oliver North, who is a lieutenant colonel, deeply involved in the Iran-Contra affair and the arming of the Contra rebels against Nicaragua, mainly civilians who were killed, Nicaraguan civilians. Also seeing Henry Kissinger, who most recently a document has come out, a number of documents from the National Security Archives and other places that they have gotten under the Freedom of Information Act showing increased complicity on the part of the former Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, in the Pinochet regime, the rise of the Pinochet regime, and the fall of Salvador Allende, the democratically elected leader. These are the people we're seeing on television. But I am not seeing much comment about what is happening around the country in terms of communities organizing actually against war, even though expressing great sympathy for this catastrophe that has taken place, this horrific act in both Washington and New York.
Yeah, I mean, the Consortium on Peace Research, Education, and Development that I work with, and the Peace Studies Association, we have issued a call to our members that are K-12 peace educators, university peace studies professors and students, and peace activists to send us reports of what they've done, but also to send comments to the media, from letters to the editor to press releases and information about vigils and community forums, and simply be vigilant about it. And we're compiling a list. And I issued the call yesterday morning, and I have over 20 reports at the moment, and they're on our website that I could give out. So we started putting some resource packages. We have asked people that have contacts to local schools, that is both elementary schools and high schools, either because they have a child in them or because they're teachers or they know a teacher, to ask if we would be able to get into the classrooms and help the children cope by providing some information about what has happened, what could be the sources, and what could students, kids do to avoid stepping into those calls for revenge and fear that it may happen to them again. Surprisingly, I actually looked at what the mainstream media has done, and on the major America Online site that comes in when someone logs on, there is actually a call for parents to teach tolerance. And surprisingly, like Hossein Ibish, we should give credit where credit is due. I was pleasantly surprised to see two very good articles about how to talk to your kids about what has happened without kind of falling into the trap of talking about bad guys and good guys, and without justifying and stooping to calls for revenge. So this is a good resource for people that want to talk to their friends.
And what is the website you are talking
about? The website I'm talking about is www.evergreen.edu/user/copred, CoPred/SEP11.html, SEP for September 11.
Okay, and that could be a difficult one to remember, but people can go to
democracynow.org,
and they can go to webactive.com, where they will be able to hear the programs that we're bringing you this week, Ground Zero Radio, and we will list that website as well. Kathy Kelly, will you be ending your fast tomorrow?
Yes, we're ending our fast, and yet we think it's important to continue the theme of breaking ranks, because we need to call on our friends, our family members, our co-workers, our neighbors to break ranks yet again and be a voice for peace in the midst of the cries for hatred and war. We do have life under siege encampments in 28 cities that were planned well in advance of these difficulties now. And we've asked all of the people who have planned those to respectfully create within them times of silence and perhaps candlelight vigil in memory of those who have died, but also not to give up the ground, if you will, of being able to make an assertion that this is not a time for revenge and for reprisal. And we're upset that we don't see more debate. There's almost an utter lack of debate in the mainstream media about whether or not the United States must respond with vengeful retaliation.
Well, I encourage the mainstream media to go to webactive.com as well and see some of the alternative voices that they could be broadcasting in the media. Kathy Kelly of Voices in the Wilderness, if people want to find out more information about your group based in Chicago that has been challenging the U.S. sanctions against Iraq, the last bombing that the U.S. was involved with was this past Sunday. I remember reading it Monday morning on this program just as the planes were crashing into the World Trade Center. Iraq said something like 8 people were killed in that latest bombing that got very little attention as well. Your website?
www.vitw.org.
vitw.org. That's V-I-T-W.
For Voices in the Wilderness, vitw.org.
If people could mark their calendars for January 15, 2002, we're joining with other groups to plan what we hope will be a massive gathering of activists for a January 14th teach-in and January 15th Day of Action in New York City, calling for an end to the economic sanctions against Iraq, but also wanting to embrace Martin Luther King's teachings.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Simona Sharoni of Women in Black, professor at Evergreen State College, which is having a peace conference in just a few weeks on October 6th, and Kathy Kelly. When we return, we'll be joined by veteran peace activist Father Daniel Berrigan and also a former presidential candidate, Dave McReynolds of the War Resisters League. You are listening to Democracy Now in Exile as we broadcast on stations around the country, Pacific affiliates, KPFA, KFCF, which is making it possible for this broadcast to take place. And also for the first time today, this two-hour special is being broadcast in Manhattan on Manhattan Neighborhood Network Channel 34. And if you're watching now, tell your friends as we bring together community media. Stay with us for this one-minute break.
He's got the whole world in his hand. He got the great big world in his hand. He got the whole world in his hand. He got the whole world in his hand. He got the wind and the rain right in his hand. He got the stars and moon. In his hand he got the wind and the rain. In his hand he got the whole world in his hand. He got the gambling man right. In his hand he got the lion man right. In his hand he got the crapshoot man. In his hand he got the whole world in his hand. He's got the little bits of baby. In his hand he got the little bits of babies. In his hand he got the little bits of babies. In his hand he got the whole world in his hand. He got you and me, brother. In his hand he got you and me, sister. In his hand he got you and my brother. In his hand he got the whole world.
He's got the whole world in his hands, Odetta, here on Democracy Now! in Exile, Ground Zero Radio, breaking the sound barrier, broadcasting on public access MNN Channel 34 in Manhattan, Pacifica Station, and Pacifica affiliates around the country. Also broadcasting on the web at WBIX.org, and you can find us at webactive.com, bringing together community radio, community public access television, and the internet. We are broadcasting from DCTV, Downtown Community Television, in Chinatown, just blocks from where the World Trade Center towers once stood. Teams of people from around the country, emergency workers, are going through the very gruesome and grueling task of tunneling through the tons of rubble at Ground Zero to try to dig up bodies, and if any, by any miracle at this point, survivors. It's estimated that thousands of people went down in the twin attacks on the World Trade Center, as well as the attack on the Pentagon. Now about 200 people missing. The Bush administration is saying that the stunning loss of life in the attacks and the sense expressed by President Bush that these were acts of war have freed the administration to broaden potential retaliation beyond the low-risk unmanned cruise missile strikes of the past. Instead, the options under consideration include more powerful, sustained attacks that accept greater risk to American forces and may include bombing attacks by manned aircraft and landing special forces troops on the ground. Military officers and civilian officials pointed to Bush's declaration that America would, quote, make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them, as a mandate to propose broad military options, perhaps carried out over days, weeks, or months. We're joined on the phone right now by Dan Berrigan, veteran peace activist who has spent a good amount of time in jail for his protests against the U.S. military. also joined by Dave McReynolds of the War Resisters League. Dave McReynolds was the Socialist Party candidate for president in the last election. Listening to the comments of your leaders, Dave McReynolds, what is your response?
I'm really appalled at the lack of responsibility on the part of the talking heads that I've heard. We got where we are today because we've done the things we've done. We have retaliated. We have bombed. We've done that steadily. We're still bombing Iraq on an almost daily basis. And I don't think people in this country are aware of the degree of damage we have done over the years by these retaliations. And now the people here are paying the price. Absolutely innocent people. I'm very proud of New Yorkers. For those of you who aren't in New York, I'm proud of the city and how it's held up without hysteria. Even Giuliani, whom I normally would have nothing good to say about, I think has been exemplary in the crisis. But I think for a nation that considers itself Christian to talk about revenge, it really needs to go back to a moral sense that revenge is mine, saith the Lord, that this is not going to solve anything. If anything, two quick things occur to me. One is I'm just stunned at the lack of competency of the intelligence forces that we pay billions of dollars to, that they were unable to have any hint at all of this happening before four aircraft are seized and three of them hit key targets, and we now look at a skyline that is missing a World Trade Center and a pile of rubble which has thousands of people buried in it. I still can't come to grips with that. But the other part of this, aside from that reality, is what is going to stop the next attack from being a nuclear bomb? And suppose we do all that Bush is saying we do and prove how strong we are and how much we can bomb. We got where we are today because we have been doing this. I mean, I think the average American is busy and you can't blame them for not following things. But it does look like the Israeli situation where Sharon says that there won't be any discussions until there is no terrorism. And the result has been a steady escalation of terrorism since Sharon came to power on both sides, Israeli terrorism and Palestinian. When do we pause? When do we stop? When do we try listening to a more rational or better part of ourselves? Do we, and Grace Patey said this very well earlier, do we really want to do to Baghdad or to Kabul the kind of thing that just happened to us? Is there anyone listening who wants to bring down a building in those cities or neighborhoods in those cities filled with innocent people? Because that's what happened. We had a crime here, and the criminals indeed ought to be tracked down by legal means. You don't, when there's been a crime, start bombing everyone in the neighborhood from where you think the criminal came. And that's what Bush is talking about. And I agreed with Manning Marable's concern also that our civil liberties are in danger from a president who has no interest in civil liberties in the first place. And also, I might say, no experience whatever of war or what war is about. In fact, the first shot of Bush when he made his first statement from one of the landing points was like a deer caught in the headlights of reality. Do we really want, as a nation, to inflict on other civilians the horror that we are living through here in New York, where we can't even find the bodies, where it'll be months before we really know how many people died, where some of them were incinerated in the course of the fireball, and there will never be any evidence of them? I mean, do we want to do this? And I think that's the question Americans ought to be asking.
Dan Berrigan, on Tuesday at about 8:45, 9 o'clock, where were you?
I was actually at my desk doing some writing, catching up on some correspondence, and I got the whole thing second and third hand through phone calls, because I don't think I wanted to look at those images directly. I would find them so terrorizing and so paralyzing that they would inhibit some kind of, let's say, moral clarity, and I didn't want that. So I've gone for about 2 days now without those images, without newspapers, and trying to understand an alternate way of being human in the midst of this atrocious inhumanity. And I think kind of getting there, it's very difficult to speak at all when what David McReynolds describes so vividly is happening 2 miles south of me. In any case, I it seems to me that we're trying to inch toward some public expression of grief and of alternate activity. And the Jesuits downtown at St. Francis Xavier on West 16th Street are organizing a service of prayer and a vigiling and of people being heard from that will take place on Monday evening at 7:30. And of course, everybody in the area that can get there to West 16th Street, it's just west of Fifth Avenue. Everybody is invited, everybody. It will be ecumenical in spirit, and it will try to include every faith alive in the city and every person who is grieving, and who is grieving not merely for the dead, but is grieving for the blindness of our leadership. I remember Dorothy Day saying in her day about those at the top, they must be called the blindest of the blind. And we're seeing that blindness compounded today in this rush toward bloodlust and revenge, which is destroying us from within. I mean, we've had that drama of what that does and where that goes in the rubble of the World Trade Center and the incinerated people down there. And to contemplate officially the high probability of doing the same is to degrade ourselves beyond recognition, in my opinion. So let's pick up pieces slowly and with mercy toward ourselves and find another way. And Mr. Bush.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. Father Dan Berrigan, Jesuit priest, has protested for decades against U.S. militarism in jail and out. Dave McReynolds, former presidential candidate for the Socialist Party with the War Resisters League, both speaking to us from New York City. And that does it for today's program as we bring you voices of peace and hope. Tomorrow we're going to be taking an in-depth look at the Taliban. I want to thank everyone who's listened around the country. Manhattan Neighborhood Network, we hope to be on again tomorrow. Channel 34 is the channel we're broadcasting from today. You can check and see. You can mail us email at mail@democracynow.org. That's mail at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! in Exile, produced by Chris Abrams, Brad Simpson, and Miranda Kennedy. Anthony Sloan, our engineer and music maestro. Errol Maitland of WBIX.org, our spiritual and technical director. Special thanks to Chase Pearson, Tony Riddle, Scott Gurian, and John Alpert and Keiko Tsuno. Thank you to the Pacifica stations, especially KPFA and KFCF in Fresno, and of course, all of the affiliate stations around the country. We are Pacifica. Again, listeners can hear this program at webactive.com and also get contacts there. We are broadcasting from downtown community television from the offices of Manhattan Neighborhood Network in the historic firehouse of Engine 31 in Chinatown in the evacuation zone. In exile from the embattled studios of WBAI, from the studios of the Band and the Fire, the studios of our listeners, I'm Amy.